ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्यम् नारं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत्. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction, Text 9. Kasman Mukundo Bhagavan Priturgehad Vrajam Gatha Kva Vasan Gyati Bhisardham Ketavan Satvatam Pati Kasman Mukundo Bhagavan Priturgehad Vrajam Gatha Vakva Sangyati Visardham Kritavan Satvatam Pati. Kasman Mukundo Bhagavan Priturgehad Vrajam Gatha Vakva Sangyati Visardham Kritavan Satvatam Pati Kasman Mukundo Bhagavan Priturgehad Vrajam Gatha Kvavasam Gyati Visadham Kritavan Satvatam Pati Kasman Mukundo Bhagavan Priturgeha Rajam Gataha Kvatva Sangyanti Visadham Kritavan Satvatam Pati Kasman Mukundo Bhagavan Priturgeha Vrajam Gataha Kvavasam Gyati Visadham Kritavan Satvatam Pati. Ladies, Kasman Mukundo Bhagavan Priturgeha Vrajam Gataha Vavasam Gyati Visadham Ketavan Satvatam Patihi Kasman Mukundo Bhagavan Priturgeha Vrajam Gataha Kvavasam Gyati Visadham Ketavan Satvatam Patihi Kasmat. Why? Mukundaha. Krishna, who can award liberation to everyone. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pitu, of his father Vasudev. Gehat, from the house. Vrajam, to Vrajadam. Vrajabhumi. Gataha, went. Kva, where? Vasam, placed himself to live. Gandibi, his relatives. Sadham, with. Kritavan, did so. Satvatam Patihi, the master of all Vaishnava devotees. Translation. Why did Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, leave the house of his father Vasudev, and transfer himself to the house of Nanda in Vrindavan? Where did the Lord, the master of the Yadu dynasty, live with his relatives in Vrindavan? Please repeat. Why did Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, leave the house of his father Vasudev and transfer himself to the house of Nanda in Vrindavan? Where did the Lord, the master of the Yadu dynasty, live with his relatives in Vrindavan? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. These are inquiries about the itinerary of Krishna. Just after his birth in the house of Vasudeva in Mathura, Krishna transferred himself to Gokul on the other side of the Jamuna, and after some day he moved with his father, mother, and other relatives to Nandagram, Vrindavan. Maharaj Prakrit was very much eager to hear about Krishna's activities in Vrindavan. This entire canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is full of activities performed in Vrindavan and Dwarka. The first 40 chapters describe Krishna's Vrindavan affairs, and the next 50 describe Krishna's activities in Dwarka. Maharaj Parikit, to fulfill his desire to hear about Krishna, requested Sukadeva Goswami to describe these activities in full detail. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Ginandana Sarakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Kasman Mukundo Bhagavan Prithirge Had Vrajam Gataha Kvak Vasan Gyanti Bisardham Kritavan Satvatam Pati. Why did Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, leave the house of his father Vasudev and transfer himself to the house of Nanda in Vrindavan? Where did the Lord, the master of the Yadu dynasty, live with his relatives in Vrindavan? It's interesting to note the particular words Maharaj Parikit is using to enthuse Sukadev Goswami to speak about these pastimes. We've all heard so many times the definition and meaning of Bhagavan. Bhagavan is that person, according to Parasara Muni, who possesses all the opulences, especially the six, in full. So if we just consider three of them, he's the strongest, he's the most wealthy, and he's the most powerful. He's powerful, wealthy, and what was the other one I was thinking of? Strong and powerful are the same thing. No, not famous. Famous doesn't really apply. The fame, beauty, and wealth are not what I'm thinking. The other three. Not renunciation. Well, renunciation is one. But strength and wealth, mostly. If a person is powerful, the most wealthy, and the most knowledgeable, why would he move from his father's home? He's being specific. In other words, Maharaj Parikit grew up in the palace. He's the grandson of Arjuna. So it's not that he's ignorant of everything. He knows quite a bit about Lord Krishna. But details is what he's looking for in this particular question. So he's saying this particular person who owns these and possesses these opulences, why did that person move from his own father's home? Maybe there was some story of Kamsa, a big demon, and there was some element of fear or something, but it doesn't make logical sense when you apply that word to that person. He didn't move because of Kamsa. It's not logical. Secondly, he uses the other name, Mukundo. It's Kasman Mukundo Bhagavan. Mukundo is almost like an adjective of Bhagavan, although it's a separate name. And we all know that Mukunda means the giver of liberation. So this person is not one that's bound. He's the one that can give liberation to others. So the question again arises, why did this person, who is the most powerful, the most knowledgeable, and the giver of liberation to others, Why would such a person leave his father's home and go to some other location? What is the details? So he's trying to churn Sukadev Goswami's response in a way that some tasty rasa will develop, and indeed there will be. Could have taken the class and answered the question, which is a very rasikic, wonderful thing, but that's in the future. So that's not really, the question is about the inquiry. So I want to talk a little bit about Mukunda, because recently I've been reading Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Sanatana Goswami. Figured that of all the teachings, when you meet someone, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the bulk of the book, is the teachings to Sanatana Goswami. This is Lord Chaitanya and one of his prime associates, his generals for spreading Krishna consciousness. What did they speak about? What did he teach him? So when they met, everybody knows the story of how Sanatana Goswami escaped from jail and met Lord Chaitanya in Benares. And he began his inquiries. The first chapter, 20, Lord Chaitanya describes different incarnations of Krishna, different expansions. As we heard yesterday from Trivikram, the first expansion is Balaram. But to specifically tie that in with this Mukunda Bhagavan, I read something that I'd never really heard the way I read it previously. He's going to describe, Lord Chaitanya is explaining some details about the guna avatars. Nijam sakalya krishno tamo guna aginkari samar arte maya sringe hudrarupa dari. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, expands a portion of his plenary portion, and accepting the association of the mode of ignorance, assumes the form of Rudra to dissolve the cosmic manifestation. I think yesterday Trivikram explained, Krishna expands first as Balaram. Balaram, the quadruple expansion, Vasudev, Pradyumna, Sankarshan, and Adiruddha. Sankarshan again expands into a quadruple form, and then there's Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu, lying in the Karnadakshai ocean, causal ocean, glances over material nature. And what's unique about this particular description is how he transforms so that he can relate with material nature. Purport. This is a description of the Rudra form, which is another expansion of Krishna. Only Vishnu Murtis are expansions of Krishna's personal and plenary portions. Mahavishnu, who lies in the causal ocean, is an expansion of Sankarshan. When Garbhodakshay Vishnu accepts the material modes of nature for the purpose of dissolving the cosmic manifestation, his form is called Rudra. As already explained, Lord Vishnu is the controller of Maya. How then can he associate with Maya? The conclusion is that the incarnation of Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma indicates the absence of the supreme power of Vishnu. When the supreme power is not there, it is possible to associate with Maya, the external energy. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are to be considered creations of Maya. Maya sanga vikari rudra bina bina rupa jiva tatve nahi nahi krishnara swarupa. Rudra, Lord Shiva, has various forms, which are transformations brought about by the association of Maya. Although Rudra is not on the level with Jiva Tattvas, he still cannot be considered a personal expansion of Krishna. Purport. Rudra is simultaneously one with and different from Vishnu Tattva. Due to his association with Maya, he is different from Vishnu Tattva. But at the same time, he's an expansion of Krishna's personal form. This situation is called beda-beda tattva, or achinta beda-beda tattva, simultaneously one and different. dugdayena amla yogi dhari rupa dare dogranthara vastu nahi dugda haite nare. Milk is transformed into yogurt when it associates with a yogurt culture. Thus, yogurt is nothing but milk, but still it is not milk. Purport. Of the three deities supervising the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the universe, Lord Vishnu is never separate from the original Vishnu. However, Lord Shiva and Brahma, due to their association with Maya, are different from Vishnu. Vishnu cannot be transformed into any form of material nature. I love that. Vishnu cannot be transformed into any form of material nature. Whenever there is the association with Maya, the personality involved must be different from Lord Vishnu. Therefore, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are called guna avatars, for they associate with the material qualities. The conclusion is that Rudra is not exactly Lord Vishnu, but rather a transformation of Vishnu. Therefore, he does not come within the category of Vishnu tattvas. Thus, he is inconceivably one with Vishnu and different from him. The example given in this verse is very clear. Milk is compared to Vishnu. As soon as milk touches sour substance, it becomes yogurt, or Lord Shiva. Although yogurt is constitutionally milk, it cannot be used in the place of milk. So Mukundo Bhagavan relates to this person who is completely freed from the modes of material nature. That is who he wants to hear about. There's a really nice purport also in the Bhagavad Gita. This is under that verse, Daivihi shugunamai mama maya dharatyaya mameva ye papadyante mayametam tarantite. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Why? Because he is beyond it. He's not involved with it. So the purport explains nicely. Another meaning of guna is rope. It is to be understood that the conditioned soul is tightly tied by the ropes of illusion. In the Brahma Samhita, it describes that just as Vishnu transforms into the Rudra expansion to deal with the modes of material nature, similarly, one of those expansions of Rudra covers each and every individual spirit soul with a false ego. False ego cannot have anything to do with Vishnu. So therefore, personally, in order for it to manifest, there has to be an adulteration of true ego. And that's the Rudra incarnation. That Rudra expansion, the subtle form of Ahankar, covers the living entity. So it's being described here that the conditioned soul is tightly tied by these ropes of illusion. A man bound by the hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be helped by a person who is unbound. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Lord Krishna, or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Without superior help, one cannot be freed from the bondage of material nature. Devotional service, or Krishna consciousness, can help one gain such release. Krishna, being the Lord of the illusory energy, can order his insurmountable energy to release the conditioned soul. He orders this release out of his causeless mercy on the surrendered soul, and out of his paternal affection for the living entity who is originally a beloved son of the Lord. Therefore, surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is the only means to get freed from the clutches of the stringent laws of material nature. So Mukundo Bhagavan, specifically, Maharaj Parikit wants to hear. Now what happens is that when the living entity comes to the material world and gets covered by that ahankar, he loses his interest in his original nature and attains an interest for this illusory self and those things connected to it, and becomes very enthusiastic and absorbed in a life pertaining to that illusory self. So the process of becoming freed from that illusion is a long and intricate process. There's a nice verse and purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam relating to questions and answers about Krishna, similar to what Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikit are discussing, which magnifies, explains, and draws a beautiful picture of our situation in this world. Moniya sarupristo ham bhavad bir lokamangalam yat krita krishna samprasno yenatma suprasediti. O sages, Sutta Goswami speaking to the sages of Namasharanya, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. One of the paragraphs in the purport. The whole world is full of questions and answers. The birds, beasts, and men are all busy in the matter of perpetual questions and answers. In the morning, the birds in the nest become busy with questions and answers. And in the evening also, the same birds come back again and become busy with questions and answers. The human being, unless he is fast asleep at night, is busy with questions and answers. The businessmen in the market are busy with questions and answers. And so also the lawyers in the court, and the students in the schools and the colleges. The legislators in the parliament are also busy with questions and answers. And the politicians and the press representatives are all busy with questions and answers. Although they go on making such questions and answers for their whole lives, they are not at all satisfied. Satisfaction of the soul can only be obtained by questions and answers on the subject of Krishna. So Maharaj Parikit is trying to encourage, he's very specific about who and what he wants to speak about, and part of the cultivation that a person who's interested in spiritual life has to cultivate is an enthusiasm and eagerness to hear about Krishna. Even in the last few days as I was preparing for this class, if you do an exercise of trying to perceive what enthuses you, what do you like to hear about? Would you like to hear about a money-making proposition? Most people do. Would you like to hear about your children's activities, the good ones, the ones where they're excelling? People's hearts become enlivened by these topics. And although they're, we can dovetail them, ultimately, when you boil it right down to the illusion that's presented itself before us and what we've just discussed about, everything is tainted and tinged with this falseness. There's one act that dissipates or at least shines light on the silhouette of that experience, which kind of dissipates all the illusion. Death. Maharaj Parikit, we're coming into the 10th canto. He's already heard 9 cantos. He had 1 week to live, right, at the beginning. So the days and the time are ticking here. He's kind of getting close to the time where that snake bird's going to come. He's going to die. We're all in a similar situation where we don't know. We have no clue. It could be today. But we're not thinking it's today. Everybody knows the story of Maharaj Yudhisthira and the Yaksha. How many people have been to Kamavan, Kamyavan, Pundarik? Raise your hand. Kamyavan is the place where that conversation took place. And the Yaksha asked Yudhisthira, what is the most wonderful thing? What is the most amazing thing? The most amazing thing is that there's a really nice lecture by Srila Prabhupada where he actually quotes the Sanskrit of Maharaj Yudhisthira. And he says, I don't know the Sanskrit, but he uses Yama Mandir. That every day we see so many living entities going to Yama Mandir, the temple of death, the temple of Yamaraj. And we see all these relatives, birds, beasts, other living entities going to that death. But somehow or another, we don't think that our place is to go today. So I want to put a little plug for Samapriya's poetry. She wrote a nice poem on this topic. The greatest thing of all, a child of unusual inquisitiveness once asked a wise old man, sir, what is the most amazing thing that I should understand? A moment's thought arched his brow, a smile then crossed his face, as the wise old man began to speak with eloquence and grace. My dear young boy, you are now strong, alert, with able mind. Ahead of you are many things that you will seek and find. I shall tell you now of something which far exceeds the rest, and you and I and all the world must pass this final test. Though soon death comes to everyone, and no one gets away, there is not a soul on earth who thinks it comes today. Ah. So if we can be aware of that, there's some really nice other quotes that I found just about the enthusiastic. In Nectar of Instruction, what is the first activity, the first characteristic that Rupa Goswami suggests one employ to attain pure devotional service? Text 3. Utsahan nistayad daryat. Utsahan means enthusiasm. So Prabhupada says, one should accept this opportunity to return home, back to Godhead, very enthusiastically. Duh. Very enthusiastic. We have to be enthusiastic. And then he goes on to explain that people, as we just read in this purport, about questions and answers, people are so enthusiastic. You look at the headlines recently about the lady that was on trial for the murder of her baby. Like O.J. Simpson, the whole United States became absorbed in whether, you know, they become very, and people at work are talking about it. And well, these are topics that the whole world talks about, at least in America. I don't know if the whole world talks about it. One of the most, to share with you and experience this particular question by Maharaj Parikit was, why did Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, leave the house of his father Vasudev and transfer himself to the home of Nanda in Vrindavan? Where did the Lord and the master of the Yadu dynasty live with his relatives in Vrindavan? In 1981, I went to Vrindavan to live there, and Bhavananda was the GBC at the time. ISKCON was in quite some turmoil, so I rented a house outside and was living downtown in Vrindavan and came across part of the culture that I'd never been exposed to, that Charosi Kos Parikrama. People were, because naturally we're social beings, you know, I didn't just go up to the temple, I would interrelate with the people who live in Vrindavan. And for centuries, they have that practice where in the fall, during the month of Kartik, they go from forest to forest on Parikrama, stay in tents, go to one of the places where Krishna performed his pastime, spend the day there. And for the whole month, the whole group transfers from one forest, and the particular group I went with was 8,000 devotees from the Vallabhacharya Sampradaya. ISKCON, of course, didn't have one at the time. And they were organized. There's a whole class of people called Chobais in Mathura that organized the tents and the prasadam and the transfer. What they did was they had two sets of tents everywhere. They had one tent where everybody was living, and then the next tent where the group would go to. Then they would dismantle that tent and take it to the next place. So these people from Gujarat are generally rather wealthy, a lot of business people, but very pious. So they had a lot of money, and it was very comfortable. They would even have big vats of 10, 50-gallon drums of water that they would have somebody come at 2 o'clock in the morning and start heating up the water so everybody could take a nice warm bath in the morning. And but they also had a troupe of actors that performed the lila at the location where the pastime took place. So when you're in Mathura, there's the Janmasthan, there's the birth of Lord Krishna. When we were in Nandagram, Uddhava came and was explaining to Nanda Maharaj how Krishna wasn't coming back. It was tear-jerking. So many different places, Agasura, where Brahma stole the cows, where so many demons were killed, where the rasa dance took place, where Lord Shiva dipped into the kund to become a gopi so he could dance in the rasa-lila. And I've never had an experience. All the sankirtan, all the chanting, all the activities that we perform, I've never had an experience where I was so totally absorbed in Krishna than that month. It's totally overwhelming, if any of you feel so inspired to have it. Now ISKCON has one every... but it's a way to cultivate this enthusiasm and to compare that with what we go through in our daily activities here. Another one, in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, 8 through 12, that whole list of all the different characteristics of knowledge. Sthayam, steadfastness. Steadiness means one should be very determined to make progress in spiritual life. We see in this community even, if we take it as like a microcosm, there are different types of enthusiasm. There's Mahotsava enthusiasm, where people want to take part when there's a festival, and we get crowds of people that are really into that, and they become enthused. They want to associate with devotees. They want to come to the temple. They like the flowers and the prasadam and everything, but that's pretty much the only times you see them. Then there's the weekly enthusiasm. The ones who come, perhaps on Sunday, is more crowded than it is now. But it's kind of that example of the cooking the sugarcane juice. The more you cook it, the more one practices this process, the more one awakens their natural, real self, rather than the ahankar, illusory self, the more one becomes enthused to want to associate with this culture, this type of activity. And we were listening to a tape the other day. Srila Prabhupada was talking about that verse, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. Satatam. And he was saying it means always, 24 hours a day. Don't waste a moment. Who does that? Pure devotees do that. Pure devotees do that. Not a moment. Prabhupada would chit chat. But he had the uncanny ability to bring the conversation with anyone on any topic back to the essence of Krishna. So our challenge, our task, is also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 15.6. Prabhupada says, one should become captivated by this information. We have to become captivated. We have to cultivate that. We desire, like that picture of the material world and the spiritual world. Remember, there's the banyan tree in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. How it's a illusory representation. It's a reflection of the spiritual world. And the river in between the two worlds is desire. Everything rests on desire. The living entity's desire is what propels him to go to the material world. Nice description also by Lord Chaitanya. Of course, it's a little bit indirect, but this is how Maya works. There are innumerable conditioned souls rotting in the material world. imprisoned by Maya under the spell of sense gratification. The living entity is so entranced by the spell of Maya that in the conditioned life, even a pig feels satisfied. There are two kinds of covering powers exhibited by Maya. One is called Prakshepatmika, and the other is called Avaranatmika. When one is determined to get out of material bondage, the Prakshepatmika Shakti, the spell of diversion, impels one to remain in conditioned life fully satisfied by sense gratification. Due to the other power, Avaranatmika, the conditioned soul feels satisfied even if he is rotting in the body of a pig or a worm in stool. To release the conditioned soul from material bondage is very difficult because the spell of Maya is so strong. Even when the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself descends to deliver the conditioned souls, asking them to surrender unto him, the conditioned souls do not agree to the Lord's proposal. So another part of our mission involves telling others, enthusing others, inspiring others, enlightening others. About a week ago, a couple weeks ago, we were at Chaturatma's house for Manju's graduation party, had the good fortune to sit with Lakshminarayana and Shesha Prabhu. And they were telling me about a book by Purnachandra Goswami called Unspoken Obstacles to Devotional Service. And we were discussing the different path, the different steps that Srila Prabhupada and Bhakti involve. First is hearing, then contemplating, thinking about it, considering it, then acting upon it, sambandha, abhideha, and prayojana. It's a concept that's throughout all the Vedas. So there's thinking about hearing it, thinking about it, contemplating on it, acting on it, and then there's sharing it with others. It's part of the process. We have to also become involved in some sort of a practice, a method, endeavor. All of us are different. We all have different natures. But somehow or another become part of sharing this. And that helps to get realization. It helps to develop and enthuse our intelligence and our spirit soul. It's part of the process. So the verse again. Why did Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, leave the house of his father Vasudeva and transfer himself to the house of Nanda in Vrindavan? Where did the Lord, the master of the Yadu dynasty, live with his relatives in Vrindavan? Any questions or comments? Sesha Prabhu, we have a microphone? Oh, good, thanks for this.
Thank you, Dhruva Maharaj Prabhu. In the beginning, you were talking about how Vishnu doesn't become ever touched by the material energy. So would that mean that, say, if we have a dream of the deity, and the deity appears in the dream, that's the actual Supreme Personality of Godhead appearing in the dream, because it's not a product of the dreaming state or energies or whatever like that?
It's interesting because on that particular point, the Brahma Samhita also states that Krishna is full, is in each atom in his fullness. So there is a plane of transcendence. Nothing can exist without Krishna. But in order for the modes of material nature to manifest, it can't be Vishnu or an expansion of Vishnu. It has to be that adulterated. But it can't exist without his presence. The structure, just like the body doesn't really exist without the skeleton, at least the human body, it would just become a lump and kind of fleshy. So the skeleton holds it up. So there's a plane of transcendence which exists. Brahman, it's all pervading, it's omniscient, it's omnipresent, but that's completely beyond the modes of nature. My understanding is that the deity is also not, one should not see the deity as stone or metal. It is Krishna. Same thing with a dream state when the deity comes to the devotee. That's a personal darshan of the Supreme Lord. We know from the story of Madhavendra Puri how personal that is. So that's my understanding. Anybody have any other realizations? Or Mahatma Prabhu?
I have two questions about enthusiasm. It seems to me that that verse which you quoted, Utsahan, to be enthusiastic, number one, it's not directed to someone who's already enthusiastic, because you wouldn't have to tell them to be enthusiastic if they already were. So it's directed to those who aren't naturally enthusiastic.
It's directed to those who are not
naturally enthusiastic, because if someone's enthusiastic, you don't have to tell them. Someone's attracted to Krishna, enthusiastic, naturally enthusiastic, because of their ruchi, their taste. So it's directed to those who haven't come to that level. But it seems to me as well that it presupposes that a person is convinced that I want to be Krishna conscious. Like Prabhupada says, we are on the threshold of death. So, if I'm on the threshold of death, I can get out of this mess after a zillion, gazillion years. I should be enthusiastic. It all makes sense. But we find, I wanted you to address what I think, what I see in myself and others. On a certain level, when a person is not fully enthusiastic in devotional service, there's some sense of, I don't care. Which could also be related to kind of like what Prabhupada calls envious of oneself. Like, you don't care. You're just, I'll take another body, or, so who cares? So if someone's in that situation where they're trying to be enthusiastic, but they can't just, I'm just not. But I'm enthusiastic about a lot of other things, that court case, which is funny because probably in Europe nobody even cares about
that.
You know, we're all absorbed here, and it's like, what do they care? Yeah, they got their own mind there to care about. So what would you tell a person who's just kind of, he knows or she knows there's a problem and they just can't seem to do much about it because they don't care enough to be enthusiastic or determined or whatever else is required to deal with it?
One of the most influential aspects on us as social beings is our association. That's why I gave the example of the Charosi Kos Parikrama. I was associating with, I put myself in the association of others who were performing actions. If I start to talk about something else right now, let's talk, I could take a topic, I could pick it, and I could start to talk about it, and if I'm enthusiastic about it, and I'm knowledgeable about it, and I have some enthusiasm about it, chances are pretty good I could inspire everyone about it on a certain level. So our association is really a core issue when it comes to who and what we are, what we're looking for in our future. One of the things I was going to touch upon also was the value of human life. I was thinking how years ago, say a century ago, 150 years ago, they would take cadavers, dead bodies, in medical institutions and colleges and cut them up, searching for the particular type of tendons and bones and circulatory systems. And in this way, they learned over the course of generations more and more about the body. Now, in today's world, they're absorbed in searching the brain. And they're finding that human brain is so unique and different from every other species. One of the things that we can do is we can plan. We can plan something for the future and take steps with our intelligence to attain that goal. So, if indeed we have the logical understanding that death is there, we should be enthusiastic, then we should apply a process, a procedure, a method. This is what Upadeshamrita is all about. Utsahan, how to do that, how to cultivate the practices of bhakti. And sangha tyagat. Tyaga means give it up. renunciation, sangha tyagat, satovrittihe, sangha tyagat, give up the association of non-devotees, satovrittihe, vritti, follow this, follow these people, follow this previous acharyas, give up the association of non-devotees and follow and associate with devotees. And then the next verse describes tadati prittigirnati guyong nalkip, how to cultivate and how to relate with the devotees. What are those activities? Giving in charity, receiving in charity, revealing one's mind in confidence, hearing somebody else's. These activities help cultivate our enthusiasm about topics, whatever they are. We're kind of like almost in one sense can be captivated by just about anything. So if we with our intelligence apply that to the topics and the path, then we can steadily progress it along it. Although diversions and other things will naturally come, we can't become too discouraged by those as well. Whole science. Madan Prabhu? More?
I was just about to open my mouth, and Mahatma said, I was thinking, and it caught me. I'm predictable like that. the same point that you just made, I was in my mind going through a similar process, that it says if you render service to the pure devotee, that you get this urge to hear. Mm. And because the definition, I think it's in that Upadesamrita, where it says enthusiasm means intelligently carrying out acts in Krishna consciousness. So as Mahatma pointed out earlier, if you don't have that enthusiasm, you intelligently see how do you get it, and that's the sadhana. The sadhana is the association that's been engineered by Srila Prabhupada to give all those qualities and associate ISKCON of the society of devotees. By pleasing the spiritual master, one gets the urge to hear. By hearing, then you get the intelligence, 10-10, on how to progress. And then by the process of opening the jar, the honey, you taste what's inside.
I'm remembering in Jiva Dharma, the question asked, the Babaji's speaking about Namabhas and Sudhanam. And his question, the question is, how can one who's chanting Namabhas, which is the cleansing stage of chanting, how can that be elevated to Sudhanam, pure chanting? And the answer was association with more advanced devotees. Should always seek the association of people who are more advanced. They can help us. They can guide us, enthuse us, and inspire us. Divyanga people.
I was listening to Prabhupada the other day, and he said, Maharaj Prickett had 7 days' warning. And he said, but we think we have 7 millions of years.
So very good.
That shows you where the consciousness comes from, that I'm not in a big hurry because it's not me. He had 7 days' notice. We have 7 millions of years.
Nice. Jai Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.